Thank you. It sounds like we're going to need it.
So how is Carpenter doing?
Carpenter's doing well.
Great.
Yeah, he's almost 10 months now, so.
Wow. So my wife's niece here had a baby last year. So it's always nice to see him just change so quickly.
She had a boy, so they're probably near the same age.
Yeah. So the city of Tucson annual barbecue was yesterday, and then we held it out at Randolph Park. It was a little bit warm, but we got 51 yeah. people.
Oh, nice.
Sounds good. So as soon as you retire, we're going to have to sign you up.
Well, might be another 28 years or something like that.
Okay. I'll be long gone then.
A lot of things will be different by then, I bet.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Morning, Mark. They're still working on getting the room connected, is what they last said a few minutes ago.
Hi, sorry about that. We had some difficulties in our meeting room. I do have a guest with us, so he's just in the audience sitting in my office, just so everybody's aware. So technically you're in the background.
Okay. Welcome to the March 2026 meeting of the Board of Trustees of the Tucson Supplemental Retirement System. Lisa, would you please call the roll?
I think you're muted there, Lisa.
Lisa, please call the roll.
Charlton Farron?
Present.
Terry Train?
Present.
Mark Rubin?
Present.
Kimberly Swanberg?
Present.
John O'Hare?
Present.
Dave Seymour?
Present.
Angela Zamalam? I know she's going to get ready to... She's absent right now. Did I get everyone?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a quorum?
Yes. All right. The first order of business is the consent agenda. Do I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Would you call the vote, please, Lisa?
One second. Sorry. Mark Rubin?
Aye.
Dave Seymour?
Aye.
Angela Zamalam?
Aye.
Charlton Farron?
Aye.
Kimberly Swanberg?
Aye.
John O'Hare?
Aye.
Terry Train?
Aye.
Right, the next item on the agenda is dual employment transfer of service. Lisa, I assume you're prepared to talk about that. I know nothing about it.
Yes, so I have written a memo regarding this task. We have an employee who has asked for, so I hope everyone has had a chance to read this memo that I've written. So there's a question that I'm asking the board on whether we should approve this. This was asked of me, but I believe that this should be a board voted upon ask, as this is probably going to be setting a precedent. Do I need to read this memo, or does
Lisa, Cassie, do you want me to recap it?
Please.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, board members, good morning. A question came up that is not addressed in the code, so it is coming to the board for an interpretation and a decision on how the code provision should be applied. This is a situation where a member was working two full-time positions at the same time, one for the city and one that was covered by ASRS. And we have provisions under state law and under the city code that allow members to transfer their service from ASRS into TSRS. And so the employee made an application to transfer their state service from ASRS to the system. And normally that would be approved under the code provisions. The unique situation here is that the employment overlaps and occurred at the same time that the individual is already receiving full credit for their service with the city. So as far as I know, this is the first time this has occurred, where we have been asked to look at potentially crediting the same period of time twice for two different jobs. If the individual held two different full-time positions with the city, the code would prevent double service credit. The code allows only up to 1 year of service credit for city employment at a time. But here, because of the transfer situation, it is theoretically possible that they could get 2 years of service credit for 1 year, a 1 year time span. So I reviewed the code. It's not specifically answered. And conferred with Lisa as the administrator, and she was most comfortable sending this to the board for determination, because this is the kind of interpretation that would have to be applied in the same manner going forward if the question comes up again.
Is this for one-year period, or does this apply to if this person works multiple years in two full-time jobs, does it apply for the multiple years or just 1 year?
If this person worked in the two positions for more than a year, so it would apply to the entire period of service that's eligible or would that's considered for transfer.
And do we get the money associated mm-hmm. with the employment at the other plan?
Yeah, the code provides that these transfers from the state systems have to be actuarially neutral, which means that the money coming in has to cover the service credit and there's no excess liability created for the system.
And is the state down with sending us that money, or is that something that FERC has to be dealt with?
No, they would. Both the state systems have statutes providing that they will send the money under these reciprocal transfer provisions. So the question is solely whether TSRS will accept it because the period of time is already credited for city employment.
Don't forget, I asked this question. Forgive me. Do people have questions or comments? Let me ask one more question. I'll make a comment. It's really troubling to me that somebody is working full-time for the city and has another full-time job. I just have real doubt, whether the city's getting this work or if the state is. The notion that somebody's working two full-time jobs for a lengthy period of time, it seems odd to me.
May correct it. I believe it's part time, not full time.
Is that true, Lisa? Because it was presented as two full time positions.
Yes, I think I guess it was like a it was a permanent part time. So I think it was presented as full-time, but it's a permanent part-time, similar to what the city used to have. So they did receive a full benefits, but it was a permanent part-time. They didn't work like 40 hours.
Okay, because that's interesting because, part-time employment at the city is no longer eligible, right? So again, if this part-time position was at the city, this would not be an issue because part-time employment is not covered by the system. So this is, again, a unique issue because it's a transfer in from the state system.
Mm-hmm.
Why does somebody, is it simply a matter of convenience? You get one check each month if you transfer this credit to the city?
No.
Or is there something more going on?
There's something more. This individual is not yet fully vested based on their city service under TSRS. So this transfer of service credit from ASRS will put them over and earn a vested benefit under the city's plan. So they have, let's say, 4 years of service with the city. They need five to be vested in their city pension. If they're allowed to transfer the service from ASRS, they will be fully vested in their city pension.
Did you have a chance? read the letter that's connected in the packet. There's a letter that the employee wrote, just so some reference.
Mr.
I
Chair,
have a
Lisa,
quick,
I believe
quick question.
Terry has a comment. Yeah.
Yeah. Did the employee at any point in time, do we have evidence that they did register their secondary employment as they are required to do as a city employee? And that would clear up, was it part-time, was it full-time, start date, is it continual? Do we have that information that is available to all of us to see?
I did ask the same thing. We don't have that right now, but I can get that information. I believe the employee did have that.
I would recommend that we take a look at that and that we validate with the immediate supervisor or the chain of command that they actually gave approval, whether it's part-time or full-time, the nature of the position, et cetera.
Yes, and I think that that's a good point. If obviously the city procedures on the employment side need to be followed before any service credit could be honored under the system.
Okay, so should we hold this over to the next meeting?
Is that a motion to table?
Yes.
Thank you. Well, it was treated that way. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Lisa or Cassie, is there any potential significant harm to putting this off until April?
Good question.
I don't believe so, and I think that it's appropriate. I mean, there is a letter to the board from the employee, but I think it's really important that the board makes this decision on a uniform basis, regardless of who the individual is, because this would apply in future similar situations. So I think we need to get all the information in front of the board.
I just read the letter. I missed this on the agenda when I was getting ready for the meeting. There's a little more sympathy than is exhibiting given the employee circumstances, but it's still concerning. So does anybody feel like we need to deal with this today? Right. If not, would you call the roll, call the vote on the motion to table?
Mark Rubin?
Aye.
Dave Seymour?
Aye.
Angel Onzimala?
Aye.
Charlton Farron?
Aye.
Kimberly Swanberg?
Aye.
John O'Hare?
Aye.
Terry Train?
Aye.
All right. Our friends from Talon are up. Want to take it away?
All right. Good morning, everybody. So what we have on the agenda, it's two items. I think it'll take under 5 minutes, so we'll get going. So it was the January meeting, I believe, where we started talking about the T. Rowe Price investment guidelines. You all had some questions on the amendments that they wanted made. We had a bunch of back and forth with them. We tabled it for the last meeting, so you should have, and I can share my screen if it's easier for folks, but the amended policy for T. Rowe Price. Actually, let me share my screen. Just give me just a second. Okay. So you have multiple documents for your investment managers. You have your overall investment policy statement, which broadly governs how things should be invested, what should be done, asset allocation, and the like. You can grant managers specific exceptions in what you see here, the investment advisory agreement. There was an IMA in place with T. Rowe Price already, which provided them some additional flexibility relative to your guidelines. There was a section, and I'll come down here, which is really where it got changed, where it referred back to your policy, which is where that 50% issue came up. And maybe as a quick reminder, there's a policy in there that you couldn't have more than 50% in any one sector. As we've seen markets change, we've seen, I'm not going to say the rule change, but we've seen the nature of things change. When you have something like technology making up the percentage of the index it can, it's very, very difficult based on the current total IPS for some managers to fully implement their style. So what we did after a lot of discussion with T. Rowe Price was come here, and what they're really asking for is plus 10% for any sector based on what the benchmark weight is. So if the benchmark weight is at 55%, they can hold up to 65%. And maybe as a quick reminder, what the issue was is that they were allowed to purchase additional securities in technology on, I don't remember what the date was, but let's just say day one. On day three, the market moved, the benchmark weight went under 50%. So they would have been forced to sell to get under that 50% threshold inside of a very, very short period and not in line with how they were thinking about things. So what this would do is it allows them that flexibility to move without running into that 50% rule. What you'll see here is we took out the language that referred back to that specific section in the policy to allow them this flexibility, and they just get that up to 10%. So theoretically, because it might be a question, if the benchmark was 70%, let's say in one sector, they could theoretically go to 80% total portfolio in a single sector. Mr. Rubin, I see you chuckling there. So that is potentially a fall-on effect. You know, sitting here today thinking about the benchmark weight being 70% in one sector, it presents a whole host of other issues that we'd probably talk about beforehand. But this is what the, you know, what they requested, and we are comfortable with it on our end. So certainly happy to take questions on it though.
Questions, comments, Cassie?
Yeah, Craig, does this run counter to the IPS, or are we granting an exception to the IPS through this amendment with T. Rowe?
This would effectively be an exception specifically for T. Rowe, because the way that the wording is now, you effectively can't really hold more than 50% in a specific sector unless the benchmark weight is 50%. And so depending on how the market moves, it potentially causes a lot of turnover in a portfolio just because the benchmark is moving around. And so nobody else has asked for this. We have seen other large cap equity managers ask for things similar. But based on the other mandates you have, we've not gotten other requests. We have shared, you know, your updated policy with everybody. But for T. Rowe, based on how they want to implement, this is what they requested as additional flexibility.
Okay. And that makes sense to me, but I do think that we need to make sure the IPS acknowledges that the board can grant exceptions.
We can go back and take a look. I'm pretty sure it does.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I would say this was in place already, and we didn't change any of that specific language in the policy. So.
Craig, quick question. So in the unstriked portion right before that, it says no more than 25% of total market value at the time of purchase may be invested in any one industry. Can you explain that more and how it relates to the new sentence?
Yeah, so sector is something like healthcare. Industry would be like biotech or pharmaceuticals or something like that. So it's the drill down further.
Got it.
Yeah, the nuance.
Okay, got it.
Kimberly?
Thank you. Just a couple questions. IPS, what does that stand for?
Investment Policy Statement.
Okay, thank you. And then with that, who discovered that? Did they come forward or did we go to them? I was just curious whose responsibility is it to manage all of these to make sure we don't have any other deviations?
So the way the policy is stated, the managers report if they are out of compliance with the policies. And so they came to us, and I think it was in January, with the breach that occurred and said, we were forced to sell because of this. This is not consistent with how we want to do things now. When we signed these, nothing was close to 50%, so we believe we need additional flexibility. And that's what spurred this additional discussion for their specific mandates.
Okay, and then our last question, if we didn't make any modifications, the attorney's comment on, can we do that to this broad IPS as a whole, but with this one specifically, if we didn't make any changes, what would happen? We would accept the deviation?
No, they would need to get back into compliance with the policy.
Okay.
So they've had a little bit of a window as this has been worked through, but they would need to adhere to the policy as it is written if this is not agreed to. And so what you would hear from them if they were to present is, and we obviously have no idea what's going to happen moving forward. They might come in and say, oh, we weren't able to have, because right now technology is the one we wanted to have, 57% in information technology when the benchmark was at, 48. We weren't able to do that, so we only had, 49 or 50%. Our other portfolio outperformed you by 50 basis points, 70 basis points. So, you could also have the opposite, so you don't know what's going to happen moving forward, but they do have a baseline in terms of how they manage money. And so that would really be the trade-off. Because you don't know exactly how it would perform relative to what they would do standard.
Thank you.
Any more questions, comments? Cassie, this does require board action, correct?
Well, Cassie, maybe a question on my end. Do you want, would it be okay if they maybe, if they are going in the direction approved or deny this contingent on what that language in the policy in the IPS says?
My recommendation would be that if the board is in agreement with this approach, to approve this for T. Rowe and then follow up with any needed revisions to the IPS, because the board controls that document. I think it's important that T. Rowe gets the authorization that they need, or a denial, and then we'll align the IPS.
Any more discussion? I would like to entertain a motion.
Just one item of discussion, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Just one thing to note, when I was looking into this more, there's a lot of companies that, you would recognize as a tech company that isn't labeled as a tech company. And so it's very likely that our portfolio is even more in tech than, what is formally stated. So there's some nuance to how these labels are kind of assigned to companies anyway. So I'm kind of in favor of approving it.
Jill?
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we deny, what then? What happens if we deny?
They would just need to be in compliance with the investment policy statement. And so they wouldn't be able to express their full views as they want. They might want to in some cases.
Is there any reason to think that? I'm thinking of the question. I can't imagine. Who Would this in any way cause them to say, it's too much bother, we're going to give you back your money and move on? But I think it's probably a silly question.
I wouldn't think so. Never mind. I would not think that that would be a problem. You know, I think I said it a minute ago, that what you might hear, though, is we could have done this. Your results might have looked like this if we had been allowed to, but we weren't. And, you know, obviously without knowing, you don't know what the future looks like. And so, you know,
if I may,
I have history decades ago representing Walter Dimmers and having arbitrary rules in place can sometimes, well, it can often cause more transactions. That's not a huge problem here, but it can create consequences that are perhaps not intended. You know, like chasing your tail and always being two steps behind because you're chasing yesterday's news. All right. Any more discussion? Kimberly?
Just a question. Are they in compliance now? I'm sorry, I missed that piece.
As of today, I don't know the answer to that as of today.
Okay, because they may have already gravitated towards compliance, you know, and if they have done that, I would be more in favor of changing the IPS or looking at the IPS, you know, the policies and procedures, you know, versus doing this first and then the IPS. But I understand Tarleton's point of view as well.
But quickly, I'd say no. When we sent these out again to all the managers, no one else came back and requested anything. And this, at this point, this is something a little bit more specific to large cap equity than we've necessarily seen in other spaces. And so, you know, I think at this point it makes, I'll call it the path of least resistance is updating this for them specifically. And if this becomes a broader market issue, then revisiting it in the broad policy.
Mr. Chair.
I think we're good. Thank you.
Any more discussion?
Yes. Could we come on back in a year's time or 2 years time to find out if this was a wise move if the board happens to approve it? I think that would be a good education on how these things work.
You can. I would say the hindsight discussion is very difficult. Just from the perspective that point in time matters quite a bit. And if you have, you know, let's say you have another AI controversy, and AI is, you know, where this issue, technology is where this has taken place. This decision could look really bad in a year. I just simply don't know. We don't know. T.R. Price doesn't know. The idea is to provide them more flexibility as we have seen increasing changes in concentration and benchmarks, to allow them the flexibility to do what they feel, is needed. It's very hard to second guess from there.
So I guess I do have a comment on that. In the current context, I mean, I'm comfortable with this. If we do approve it though, and let's say the market continues to trend that way and, you know, a single sector, really starts to dominate even more. Let's say it becomes 75% of the market and we give them a full 10%. They could be, you know, 85% in a single sector, right? Like, is 10% too much? Because we could kind of approve it, but maybe give them 5% or 8% or, you know, less. I'm just throwing that out there. 10% seems a little bit arbitrary and can be pretty large.
Sure. So I think I sort of jokingly made this comment at the beginning. If it does go to 70%, yeah, 80% is probably not what you want. It's not going to go to 70% overnight. This is not locked in stone. It can be revisited. So if the market continues to trend that direction, I would expect that we would have conversations prior to it getting to there to consider a portfolio position. Because I would say, you know, keep in mind that you have, you know, two basically index mandates in large cap equity. So, you know, just from having the index exposure, you're going to get that no matter what. And so I think then it becomes a discussion. Does some of that become active at that time? How do we think about the markets? I think it becomes a broader discussion. It becomes a more pointed discussion if we see a continuing trend upwards.
Yeah, and this might be overcomplicating it, but we could also consider something to the effect of, instead of like how big that sector is in this moment of time, we could see, you know, how big that sector is over the last 3 years or something, you know, like instead of if it's fluctuating wildly, maybe we don't want to rush into that too, you know.
You don't get to see a huge fluctuation. I mean, with this issue that we're specifically talking about, I think it was like 2% over a two or three day period. I think it might be back over now as of today. And so these things tend to more trend over time than have 5-10% swings in shorter periods.
Like, what would be the biggest growth in a single year, you think?
I don't know the answer to that. We can. I would have to look into. I don't know that off the top of my head. Kimberly.
I was just wondering how long have they abided by the standards, and it seems like they're bringing this up because there was a deviation. You know, if they were that passionate about this, I mean, it should have been brought up, you know, before that. I'm just, you know, trying to get to the root.
So this agreement's been in place since 2012. Long time. The market looks pretty substantially different. And so I would say they hadn't had a problem with this. Until they saw that volatility and that 50% came into play because of where we've seen technology. And so, you know, when they came to us, they said this wasn't, they were like, candidly, this wasn't really on our radar. It hasn't been an issue. When we entered into this, it wasn't an issue. Like the bench, none of the sectors were even close to these thresholds. But with what we've seen, you know, it became and, you know, is a problem. And so they asked, you know, that's why they requested the additional flexibility because of that, the timing difference in terms of when they bought a little bit, then the market moved, and then they were technically out of compliance and would have been forced to sell before they would have otherwise done that. So.
Any additional discussion?
Could we just approach it where they're not forced to sell, but they're not allowed to buy outside of the policy? Does that make sense?
It does. From a compliance system monitoring standpoint, I don't know if it's implementable for them. We could follow up and ask if you wanted to, but I think in general, people like rules for this because it's easier to monitor and comply with than something like that.
Yeah.
I think for our perspective, too, that's too bad. Much flex.
Yeah, it's bad.
Any further discussion? All right. I'd like to entertain a motion to approve the exception to the policy. And separate from that motion, we will revisit at some point in the distant future the incident policy statement. I don't think we have to make that a part of the motion itself. We need to do that. Is there a motion to approve the exception to the investment policy statement?
I motion to approve.
Thank you. Is there a second? Well, Craig, I guess you need to go back to T. Rowe Price and tell them that the board is not willing to make the exception. Motion doesn't have a second.
Okay.
So thanks for your efforts. They're appreciated.
No problem. We'll let them know.
Sorry?
So we'll let them know.
We'll let them know. Okay. All right. The BlackRock fee update.
Yeah. It took BlackRock a little bit of time to get us over paperwork. It's just a very, very simple amendment, memorializing the fee changes. That is with Lisa and Dawn, and just needs to be executed. So there's really not much to share on that front. They sent it to us, I think, very late last week, and we reverted it back, but it's just executing that. There were some other very minor changes to the agreement in place, but they were not substantive. So.
Okay, thanks. Lisa, the election update?
We just wanted to report that we've had quite a few ballots come back. And so the election's looking very good. So this is probably one of the most active elections we've had for just one seat. So... we're very excited. So we just wanted to report that, I don't know, we have probably, I don't know, maybe 100, 150 back, and we still have another full week, to still receive some back. So, Tarleton will be busy.
It's coming up.
Thank you. Anybody in the audience have anything they want to raise? Right. I note that the agenda mentions future agenda items, but I don't think those are items we need to discuss today because they're for the future. So, with that, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
I'll second.
Call the vote, please.
Anjel Ozumalam.
Aye.
Terry Train.
Aye.
Dave Seymour.
Aye.
Tarleton Farron.
Aye.
Kimberly Swanberg.
Aye.
John O'Hare.
Aye.
And Mark Rubin.
Aye. All right. Thank you all. We'll see you next month. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Have a happy Easter.
You too.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. Bye.
Take care.